Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another season of the Brian and Ethan Biathlon Podcast. Ethan, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm excited for another season. Happy to be back. And yeah, hopefully we can continue our successful streak of completing podcasts last year.
I know. It's actually funny you say that because I went back to listen to some of the last podcasts that we did at the end of last year. And it's funny how we were talking about it was our most successful year because we did as many podcasts as there was weeks of biathlon, I believe. So if we can keep this momentum rolling into this year, I think I think we're going to have a pretty good year. I mean, we're going to try for consistency because both of us have a lot of other things going on outside of biathlon, or I guess for me, a lot of travel within biathlon. And then you are obviously at school, but you know, we're going to try for consistency, and I think we can do another full year, and we're I think we're going to put together another good year of podcasts. So what you been up to? I think fans are always kind of curious about, you know, what we've been up to in the off season and also outside of biathlon. But what have you been up to this year?
Ooh, not a whole lot. Mostly just, you know, going to school. I'm in my last year of undergrad and just trying to finish strong and get to the end.
Sweet. Well, I've been coaching biathlon and traveling all over the U.S. and pretty soon once the winter rolls around and I'm going to be traveling a little bit in Europe. So yeah, I think kind of going back to that consistency, you know, like we'll try to get consistent episodes out, but who knows what'll happen. But you just have to subscribe and tune in if you want to know if we can get all the podcasts out. But cool. Well, before we dig into it, I do want to give a shout out to biathlonpool.com because they are I've been working with them throughout the fall to, you know, give them some feedback about, you know, how they can make the game better, different ways that they can implement different strategies for pricing and, you know, teams and stuff like that. So a lot of our conversation, for those who have listened in the past, does revolve around fantasy biathlon just because, you know, you and I do like to play fantasy biathlon. And so I just want to give a quick shout out to fantasy biathlon pool at biathlonpool.com. And this year also, last year we gave out a bib for a signed race bib from Sean Doherty for the winner of my pool on Biathlon Pool. And this year I was chatting with Sebastian Samuelson and he has generously donated a signed bib for the winner of my pool this year. So currently there's over 500, close to 600 people registered to play fantasy biathlon. And there's just about 200 people in my pool. So yeah, not too late. Season hasn't started yet. And even if the season does start, you know, there's plenty of points to be earned with some good biathlon knowledge. So head over there. Sign up. It's free to play. I don't know why I didn't mention that yet, but it's free to play. So share your biathlon knowledge with the rest of the world. And also, Ethan, we were trying to remember earlier, did you beat me last year? Or did I beat you?
At one point I was way ahead of you, but I don't remember who finished on top in the end.
Yeah. So, oh, well, we're just gonna have to figure it out again this year.
I'll just have to remember this time.
Yeah. All right. Let's do this. All right, it's time for our first shot, and let's start with some feel-good stories. Ethan, I just saw a press release that Greenland will be making their relay debut in Östersund. As we all know, Ukilek Sutermark, she's been on the World Cup for a few seasons now, pretty successful solo Greenland biathlete. Her brother, Sondre, is going to be making his World Cup debut as they compete together in the single mixed relay. And this will be the first time ever Greenland has a relay team in biathlon or in the Biathlon World Cup. And I think that's just freaking exciting because that just shows that biathlon's expanding and we're getting more nations to participate. And yeah, granted, it's small and they might be the only two biathletes from Greenland. I'm not really up on my Greenland knowledge in biathlon, but it's just cool to see that, you know, they're having a historic moment for their nation.
Mm-hmm. It's super awesome to see and for them to get some World Cup experience, because I know they've had some experience on the IBU Cup. And they're both super young, which is exciting to see, and you know, a little reassuring to know that no matter how it goes in their first relay on the World Cup, that it's just a learning experience. They're going to have many more to come. And yeah, I'm just excited to see what they can do, what they can put together.
Yeah, and Ukulik had a pretty good season last year. I think she bounced around between the IBU Cup and the World Cup a little bit, but she did come in 21st in Rupe Holding, in the Rupe Holding sprint, and that allowed her to qualify for her first ever mass start. So the fact that we had a Greenland athlete in the mass start in Rupe Holding was really cool. She did come in 28th, but that's awesome. So she does have two top 30s. Then her brother, Sondre, he has a little bit of IBU Cup experience, but for the most part, he's just been on the Junior Cup. But he did place 20th in Soldier Hollow at the Junior World Championships two seasons ago. So, I don't know. This will be who knows how they're going to do. I'm not saying, hey, pick them for your team, because they're like, you know, a big sleeper pick in fantasy. But I think it's just, yeah, it's really cool, groundbreaking moment for them. And so take another cool thing to look for while you're watching the first race of the season in Östersund. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're going to move on. One of the big topics of the year, before we start talking about, you know, the athletes and what we think is going to happen, one of the biggest topics of the year this year is the fluoro wax ban. And I want to go a little bit into the weeds here and share a little bit about, you know, what that's going to look like. And then we can talk a little bit about the impact that's going to have on the World Cup. But basically, every ski that is used in a race has to be submitted 30 minutes before the start. So that right off the bat is going to change a lot for the wax techs, because I mean, I've been on plenty of race trips and been at plenty of races where you're like getting the ski out the door 5 minutes before the start. And no, you never like to have it that way, but you know, sometimes with all the prep that goes into a ski, sometimes it can be, you know, pushed right to the last minute. So that's going to be a big change for the wax preparers and the wax techs. Especially if it's like a snowy day or even like a sunny day, like if conditions are changing really fast, you need to make changes in your ski prep in order to, you know, get the fastest ski. So first of all, having to submit your skis 30 minutes before the start, that's going to be a big change. But then once you submit your ski, each ski is going to be tested three times, once on the tip, once in the center, and once on the tail. And they're using a color system. So there's a certain threshold that they're looking for, like how many fluoro particles they find in the base of the ski. And if it's over a certain threshold, then you either get a yellow light, or if it's way over the threshold, then you get a red light. If there's no fluoros detected or it's under that threshold, you get a green light. So if you have three greens, you're good to go. If there's any yellow in the ski, then you get a warning. And if there's any red in the ski, then you get a red light, and you don't get to participate. Now, I say that with an asterisk, because if you have a red, you are allowed to change your ski last minute, submit a new pair of skis, and go. But the IBU is only allowing one ski change per trimester. I'm sorry. So if you get a yellow light in Östersund, you have however long it takes them to test their ski, could be only 10 minutes before your start, to get a new pair of skis into the testing corral, test them, and then hit the start line. Otherwise, if you've already changed your skis and you don't have any more changes left, then sorry, you're a DNS. You're not allowed to race, which kind of sucks. Red, if you get the red, then yeah, that's a DNS. And then the other thing is two warnings. So if you get a yellow, you get a warning. Two warnings equals a red. So if you got a warning in Östersund and then you go to Hochfilzen and you get another yellow, that's two warnings. That's a DNS. And then at the end of the race, every ski that crosses the finish line will then be tested three times again. And at after the race, if you get a red, you're disqualified. And then, you know, the yellow with the warnings and stuff. So this is really big. This is, I mean, I already talked about the difference that it's going to cause for the wax techs and everything. But this is just, you know, athletes are going to have to change their pre-race routine to make sure that their skis are submitted ahead of time. I assume that, like, I'm sure the staff and the techs might just, you know, take down that responsibility to get the skis submitted. But at least for me as an athlete, that seems a little sketchy. You know, you want to have that control of like, all right, I have race skis. I've done, you know, the proper procedure. Like, you know, if we don't have, you don't have coaches loading your magazines or anything for you before the race, you know, like it's one of those things where you kind of feel like you want to do it. But yeah, I don't know. What do you think about this whole floral wax ban this season?
I think in terms of the ban on the whole, it's a good thing. You know, that's better for the environment. I think it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes down logistically, both on the like IBU side and them having to test, as well as how prepared teams are, you know, to get skis in on time. Because realistically, you can, you know, hand your skis to your athlete, like you said, like 5 minutes before they have to go to the start line. And so now that's like the all last case scenario, like, hit the panic button 5 minutes before the start, get your skis. But the 25 minutes that they're losing and having to submit them 30 minutes before the start time, you know, you could do a lot to a ski in 25 minutes. Like you could basically do, you know, get a whole new ski at that point.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be interesting to see how the wax techs handle it. And like you said, how the athletes handle it too. Cause you know, you and I have both done races where our skis are in wax control and we don't really have any control over them. They just show up to the start line and we hope that they've been waxed and, you know, have all the things that they need to be done to them. And I think it'll be interesting to hear feedback from the athletes, hear feedback from the teams, and as well hear feedback from the IBU just to see how the whole process is going.
Yeah. And I think there's big implications here, you know, just for the results too. I mean, I guess at least with fluoros is a hydrophobic material. So it almost repels, or no, it literally repels the water underneath the ski. And as the ski glides across the snow, it that little bit of friction creates just a little bit of water between the base of the ski and the snow. And so the little bit of water there, it actually, you know, it wants to like suction the ski to the ground a little bit and slow it down. But what the fluoros do is it's a hydrophobic material that actually repels that water and creates a really quick, it creates no attachment to the ground or to the snow or to the water. So it makes the ski glide really well. And it's like, you know, everyone talks about nailing the wax, right? But I think with fluoros, like, if you put a fluoro on a ski that's not necessarily the perfect wax for the day, you're still going to have a really dang fast ski. And I think teams are fighting for that like 1-2% advantage every day where it's like, wow, yeah, we got the perfect fluoro, the perfect combination mixture of product with, you know, structure and grinds on top of that. We'll talk about that in a second. But like we got a 1% advantage. And you know, on the World Cup, I mean, the races are so tight that a 1% advantage can mean a huge difference for an athlete who's, you know, coming in 10th or coming in 5th potentially, or even the podium, or even the win. So like, that's what teams are fighting for, that 1% advantage. But without the fluoros now, it's no longer a case of, okay, we're fighting for these small advantages. I think now we're fighting not to be dropped, because the combination, the infinite combinations that you can do with a structure and with a grind. And basically what that is it's a channel, like channels that are pressed into the base of the ski to help repel, or not repel, but help the water flush out from the ski base. Think of it as like a gutter, like small little gutters that are pressed into the base of the ski, to flush the water out from underneath the base. There's infinite different patterns, possibilities, combinations. Do you structure the whole ski, the half of the ski from the binding back? Do you do a chevron, a linear? Like, there's so many different possible combinations and patterns, and there's such like there's such small differences, or sorry, such small differences in the pattern can equal major result or major differences in the speed. And so, like, let's say hypothetically, for example, the temperature calls for a chevron pattern structure, and a team goes with that, but a different team who has a bigger budget, a bigger wax box, a bigger structure box, they go with a chevron that is at a different angle, or a chevron that's a little bit deeper. And now they've found the secret formula, the secret ticket that makes their skis so much faster than the team that was just like, you know, going with the standard option. So I don't know. It's going to be, I think that we're going to see some really funky things in the results this year as a result of this. Hopefully it's not, I don't know. I'm just hopeful that it's not to the point where it's like, this isn't even fair anymore. You know, like I would hate to see a team that just, you know, puts all their money into building up their structure box that, you know, and then they just become the outright favorite. And no matter how fit of an athlete you are, it doesn't matter because your skis are 10, 20% behind and you just can't keep up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've seen before where teams have brought their own like grind machine to grind their skis fresh every single day to like a world championships or an Olympics before, and having the resources to do that is going to make a humongous difference this year. And like you mentioned before, the ski times, I hope that the times aren't like glaringly obvious of who has the resources and who doesn't, because the smaller teams aren't going to have the safety blanket of, like you said before, having fluoros on your ski no matter what. If you get the right wax, if you're off by a couple degrees or a couple humidity points, yeah, you know, you have fluoros on there to kind of save you a little bit. And now without that, if you choose the wrong ski, like, pretty much game over. Like, you're just hoping to get to the finish line, you know, in a reasonable time.
Yeah. The other thing I'm curious about too is also contamination and false positives. And mm-hmm. I mean, there's two ways of going about a false positive. Us as a staff, we are, US Biathlon is really concerned about, like, let's say you had a ski bag last year that was filled with skis that were fluoroed to the nines. Mm-hmm. And now, okay, you clean all your skis and all your bases, so they're good to go. But now you put your non-fluoro ski back in that bag. What if a little bit of fluoro gets on your ski? You go to the start line, and now, boom, you test a yellow or, God forbid, a red. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one area that I would consider a false positive is, you know, you're not trying to cheat and you're not trying to use fluorinated wax, but you got contaminated, and mm-hmm. therefore you know, tested positive. And then on the other hand is like, what if there's a material within the ski base or the ski wax, like, that is not a fluoro, but for whatever reason, it trips the, you know, the tester, right? Like, let's say Swix, you know, all the brands, the wax brands are trying to come out with the next best thing without fluoros. Like, what if they come out with some experimental wax? They're like, hey, this is really fast. You guys should put it on your skis. Do they have access to this fluoro tester? Do they know that it's not going to trip the fluoro tester? Because, you know, let's say they give it to a team and they say, hey, we tested this. It's really fast. There's no fluoros. Try it. But something that they did put in there trips the test. That's a false positive as well, in my opinion. So, like, no, they're not. You're not trying to be malicious, but you failed the test. And mm-hmm. it's tough. Would this go into the same category of, like, you know, doping, where it's like every athlete is responsible for what they put in their body, you know, strict liability, no questions asked. It's like, it's tough. So yeah, there's just a lot of things that I think we're going to see these first couple weeks in the season. And it's funny because I know, you know, again, as a staff, USBA invested a lot. And first of all, they just, you know, they just completely canned everything that they could, like, in terms of brushes, scrapers, et cetera. They had a whole wax box full of fluoros that they just, you know, they had to get a new wax box, but they cleaned as many things as they could to keep it, you know, we don't have an infinite budget. So you got to clean as many things as you can to, you know, continue to use it. Whereas I hear on the other side, Norway's solution to this problem is they just literally sold their wax truck and bought a new one. And it's like, how do you compete with that? You know, their solution to no contamination is just get rid of the whole thing and start over fresh. It's like, damn, how do you compete with that?
It'd be really nice to have that luxury.
I know. Maybe, but if they want to sell it to us for cheap, we can clean it and then we have electric.
There you go. But you brought up doping, and I think that's an interesting point, because ever since there has been doping tests, athletes and coaches and teams have been trying to find a way to get around those tests, to test negative while still doping. And I don't know if there's any teams out there doing this, or athletes or whatever. I hope that's not the case. But I wouldn't be surprised if we do hear some rumors, or, you know, some actual true statements come out that teams have been, you know, dipping around the testing or finding ways to get around it or whatever. But, you know, and I'm sure this is not the first time the IBU is using these tests. Like, they had a whole year last year where they were kind of preparing for this, and they're not alone in this. The FIS cross country World Cup circuit is doing the same, you know, same ban on fluoros, same process. I don't know if it's exactly the same process, but they're testing skis. No one's allowed to use fluoros. So the IBU isn't alone in this. They do have, you know, the cross country World Cup to kind of look to or collaborate with, or just kind of, you know, have someone else in the ring with them.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Very good point. All right, let's move on to some of the fun stuff. And now I know everyone is excited about the new year, and it's time to talk about how we think the season is going to go. And I know we made some predictions at the end of last season, but as things shook out over the year, the Women's World Cup, Ethan, this is going to be fun, I think. I really think it's going to be a fun season. I mean, just based off my calculations, I think we have six athletes that are potential winners. Like, if honestly, really, most people in the top 10, not gonna lie, most people in the top 10 from last year, if they won the overall this year, I would be like, cool, that's awesome. Like, would not surprise me at all. I think it's gonna be crazy. Obviously, Julia Simone, over the summer, just in a world of controversy with this credit card fraud situation. For those who don't know, really quickly, two credit card fraud allegations were leveraged against her, one of them being by her teammate, Justine Brezat-Boucher. And so she's been talking to the police and everything about all this stuff. And there, you know, who knows what the heck is going to happen with that. But as a result of this, she and Justine are obviously, like, there's so much tension within the French women's team. So is that going to be like this little added stress that is going to knock her off the top of the podium? On the other side, you know, I think a lot of people that I've been following a lot of, like, the Italian scene, I think a lot of people are really bullish on Lisa Vitozzi. They think she just had an absolutely incredible summer of training, had some great summer time trial results, and people are really excited for her. Everyone is waiting for Elvira Oiberg to have her season and be the top athlete. And then at the season opener in Shushin, Ingrid Tandervold just looked so, so strong and so dominant compared to Lisa Vitozzi and the Germans who were also there. So, yeah, it's just going to be crazy. I think I'm looking at the list right now. Anyone in the top 10, if they win the overall, it would not surprise me.
Mm-hmm. And I think we, you know, said this last year when we were talking about the women's overall, how it's going to be super exciting. There's so many athletes that could potentially win it, and we wouldn't be surprised if, you know, whichever one did end up winning it. And looking at, like you said, looking at these names, there's so many of them that have the potential to win the overall World Cup. And I think there's a lot of question marks that you brought up, that, you know, there's always going to be question marks at the beginning of the season. The tension within the French team is a really interesting one, because stuff like that we usually don't hear about in the sport of biathlon, where there's, you know, huge huge amounts of, you know, frustration, emotion, just within your own team and towards your teammates and fellow countrymen and women. So I'm really interested to see how the whole French team as a whole, because there was the, I don't want to say scandal, but the incidents last year with the men's team, with their coaches and athletes speaking out, and
right.
You know, it just wasn't a super pretty situation. And I think the whole French team is going to be watched really closely, men and women. And, you know, speaking of the Italians, I don't even know if you mentioned Dorothea Vera in your little intro into this topic, but you know, she was second last year and we didn't really think she would be able to continue her success. We thought her ski speed was going to drop way off last year and it didn't. And you know, she's another year older and she's still the same athlete on the range. It's hard not to, you know, feel really confident in her ability to continue shooting well, shooting fast, and just continue getting podiums and top results.
Yeah, it's funny because I released my season predictions this week, and some of the comments were about how I just didn't even talk about Doro, and I don't know why. I'm not a fan of Doro. It's not that I'm not a fan of Doro. Like, I think she's fine. I think she's done great things to bring attention to the sport. She's obviously an incredible athlete. I think maybe I err on the side a little bit of like, I want to see one of those quote unquote young gun, you know, exciting, mm-hmm. fast young females to come up and take the sport by storm. And Doro is not the young gun anymore. And so I just, yeah, like you said, I always, every year I'm expecting her ski speed to finally just be like, okay, I'm showing signs of aging. But I mean, if you look at her stats, like her skiing last year was better than 2 and 3 years ago. So who knows why, but that is the case. And she had, you know, just as successful a season last year as she did when she won the overall a couple of seasons ago. So, you know, I don't want to count Doro out, but just for me, like, I think it would just be so much more exciting to see a Vitozzi, Elvira, and who knows, maybe Julia Simone. If you asked me what I think would be most exciting, I would want to see Elvira, Vitozzi, and Lou Jeanmonod fighting for the overall, because I like Lou Jeanmonod more than Julia Simone, but I don't think she's that quality or that caliber of an athlete yet, maybe in a couple of years. But yeah, I think it'd be really exciting to see those other three just go head to head. But yeah, I like, how do you think about Hauser? Because she's another one that I put in there with sort of the Doro of like, okay, you're getting a little bit older. You had flashes of brilliance a couple seasons ago, but the last couple of years, you're, you know, kind of falling off a little bit. Her hit rate is down and we always had her pegged as like a really strong shooter. Her ski speed is not down necessarily, but it's not as strong as it used to be a couple seasons ago. What do you think about Hauser?
She's kind of a tricky athlete to wrap your head around, because you know, throughout her whole career, his ski speed has been, you know, gradually increasing and improving for the most part every year. But if you look at her hit rate, it's been doing the opposite and has been declining throughout the years, which is really interesting to see. Usually it's, you know, the shooting increases the more you're racing on the World Cup. But I think if she can kind of get back to being able to consistently shoot at a really high level, I don't see why, you know, we can't throw her name in there for a potential overall winner. I don't know if I wouldn't put all my money on her to win the overall, just because of the inconsistency, and we've only seen her, you know, at the very top for 1 year. You know, it'd be nice to see that, you know, a couple more years. I know she's 29, so I don't know how many more years she has left in her, but I don't know, I'm a little hesitant, but I think she has the tools to succeed this year.
Yeah, and she's a crowd favorite for sure. I mean, she came in third overall in 2022. She won the individual globe in 2021. But yeah, then 10th overall last year, nowhere close in the individual rank, 21st overall. And then mass start score, racing 3 out of 4 races, she came in 6th, was her best placing in a small globe. And I mean, for individual results, really nothing to write home about except for like maybe, you know, one or two podiums over the season. I don't know. It's interesting. It's just interesting when you look at her chart on Real Biathlon. Like, her ski rank has stayed pretty consistent, but her race rank is so tied to her shooting percentage, and her shooting percentage really took a dive towards the end of the season last year. And you just watch her race rank just take a dive with it. So yeah, if she can get back up to, you know, that strong shooter that I kind of have her pegged at in my mind, maybe I think she's a strong shooter because she won the individual globe, and you kind of have to be a good shooter to win that globe. Mm-hmm. But I mean, even at her absolute best, she was, you know, 90% shooter, which is, don't get me wrong, that's really good, but elite shooting these days is like 93% and above. And even, you know, that she's off on. So could be interesting to see how she does this year. Anyone outside of the top 10 who you think could fight for, you know, potential, you know, top five overall? Last year, Julia Simone was ranked 12th going into the season and ended up coming out with the victory. So anyone outside of the top 10 you see?
There's no one that really like jumps out, because everyone in the like 11 to 20 range is either rather young and inexperienced on the World Cup and isn't quite that caliber of athlete that's competing for podiums every single day, or the athletes from, you know, 11 to 20 or whatever are a little on the older side and kind of regressing a little bit in terms of ski speed. So I don't think there's anyone that really jumps out to me, but there's definitely some young athletes in there that are super exciting to watch, and I'm sure we'll see them on the podium a few times, but I just don't think it'll be consistent enough to be fighting for that overall globe.
Yeah, I agree. The only one that of those athletes that gives me like the could be interesting is Caroline Noten. I think she's had a few seasons of like pretty quality results, and it'd be interesting to see if she could have a full season of, you know, those quality results, and she could end up like Tandervold was this year in sixth place. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I don't see, like, I kind of put her at the same quality as Tandervold on her best day. But she's just lacking that consistency. And like, maybe if she has a season of best days, she could be that. But, yeah, everyone else, like I love Anna Magnusson. I love Lynn Pearson. I really like Vanessa Voigt for individual stuff. But yeah, just no one on this list that's like, you know, look out, top five contender, you know, coming in hot.
Yeah. So I think on the women's side, we're kind of at a point in the sport where it's like a changing of guard from the athletes that have been there dominating for such a long time. And like last year, Roslyn retired and Herman retired, and you know, now it's just Doro and Lisa Teresa Hauser that are kind of the common names that have been at the top for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the young athletes have a chance to really throw their hats in the ring, and who knows what could happen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. The women's side is going to be, it's going to be super exciting. Mm-hmm. All right, Ethan, is anyone going to beat Johannes Tingesbo this year?
I don't think so. I think it might be a little closer between him and Ligrid and Christensen, but he won last year by almost 500 points, which if he only got 500 points throughout the whole season, he would have finished ahead of Sebastian Samuelson in the overall.
Oh my God. That's a great perspective. That's a great way to put it.
I was just looking at it real quick and I was like, you know, cause you see his name and then you see Ligrid's and you're like, okay, cool. First and second, but 500 points is insane that was his margin over second place.
Yeah, man, if he scored half as many points as he did, he would have come in fourth overall.
That's crazy. He could have only raced half the races, whichever ones he wanted, whichever ones he didn't want to do, and still almost finished on the podium.
Yeah. So, yeah, I so this was my prediction in my World Cup prediction video. I feel this sense of him not wanting to travel to North America to finish out the season. And for that reason, Liegrid is going to sneak ahead just enough to win the globe. But if he has as dominant of a season as he had last year, there's not enough World Cup races like in those last two trimesters or those last two World Cups that even if Liegrid won them both would be enough if he was as dominant as he was last year. So like Liegrid would have to beat Bo in like couple races throughout the season, like maybe one race every other weekend. He needs to get ahead of him and then win out Soldier Hollow and Canmore in order to sneak just ahead of him, which could possibly, you know, it could happen. Like, you know, obviously last year in Le Grand Bernard, we had that ski incident where unfortunately Bo got screwed a little bit, but, you know, in terms of just like, it's almost like Liegrid needs to pray for missed targets in the individual races and hit the targets, get ahead of him, and then just have a really good, strong end to the season in order to beat Johannes Tingis. That's really what needs to happen. But yeah, I agree. I just don't see anyone being able to beat him. He's so dominant on the skis. He's so far ahead of everyone else skiing that like he can afford misses. And I mean, you know, you say he's dominant on the skis. He's also an elite shooter as well. Mm-hmm. Last season, his shooting was 90%. That's so good. So he's doing that with absolutely absurd, unheard of ski speed. Like he really is the perfect biathlete, you know, like Oleander Bjørndalen, he's regarded as the king of biathlon, but his shooting was terrible. I mean, go look at his stats. Bjørndalen's shooting was atrocious. He was just a super fast skier. He also did it for a really long time. And like, he also kind of came up, he came up when biathlon wasn't as competitive as it was now. For COD, he really changed the game in terms of competitiveness. Like, he was a really good shooter, really strong skier, but neither of those guys were putting up numbers like Johannes Tingis Bo is. So, yeah, it's magical to watch. It's like, it's almost like an honor to be like, yeah, like Bo, we got to see the Bo era. Mm-hmm. And hopefully this year, if I can make it to Soho or Canmore, I'd love to see Bo in person. I saw him when he came to Presque Isle, Maine a couple of years ago, and just seeing him in person is just, it's incredible.
Yeah. 'Cause watching on the TV, you just don't have the perspective of being there just to see how fast he's covering the ground. Obviously, you can see the shooting aspect pretty well on TV as you can in person, but it's just mind-blowing what he's been able to do the past few years.
Yeah. So I guess I put up the question, you know, anyone else in the top 10 who you think is going to be able to crack that Norwegian dominance this year? They have, you know, Benny Dole had fourth place last year, and honestly, surprisingly, Martin Ponsaloma came in fifth overall. I don't recall that. I don't remember him having as good a season as that, but there he is, fifth place. Was able to crack that Norwegian dominance. Anyone else? Fjellmaye, Hartvig, Jacmel, Seb. Anyone else do you think able to get in there and crack that Norwegian, top five?
I think I wouldn't be surprised if Norway finished first through fourth in the overall. But you mentioned a few names like Ponsaloma, Fjellmaye. I think Hartvig and Jacmel are just like a little too young and inexperienced to be competing for podiums every single race and consistently achieve those.
Yeah.
But Fjellmaye, Ponsaloma, and especially Seb Samuelsson, I think we can almost expect that from them to be top six in the flower ceremonies on the podium, or at least top 10. Kind of at the minimum every single race. And hopefully, especially Seb Samuelsson can have a little bit more consistency and a little bit better season results wise. And it'd be super awesome to see Fionn Maillet back to his what was it, a year or two ago, where he was just skiing and shooting lights out, pushing Johannes Tengesbo and Ligrid every single race. It would be super awesome to see someone outside of that Norwegian team competing at the top every single day.
Yeah. And really, Fjellmaye didn't lose. I mean, he was the overall champion two seasons ago. He didn't lose anything on the range, but his skiing just like fell apart last year. He was skiing faster than the average top 10 athlete two seasons ago. And then last year he was skiing a full percent slower than the top 10 athlete. Granted, you know, Johannes Tengesbo had a crazy season, but even compared to the average skier, he lost nearly a percent on the average skier, and his shooting time went way faster. So It's not like he was, you know, losing time on the range or anything. So, man, like even looking back at Fjellmaye's recent seasons, like pretty much ever since 2018, he could kind of guarantee a few podiums every year. And then in 2022, he was on the podium, like literally 60% of the time. Last year, he was on the podium less than 1%. 9% of his races, where the season he won, he was 60% of the time on the podium. So less than 10% of the time he was on the podium last year. And that was his worst showing since like 2016. So hopefully, yeah, he's got it in him, obviously. Hopefully he can get it back.
Yeah. I think one thing on the men's side that will be super interesting to watch is that factor of the fluoro wax ban. Or if you really choose the wrong ski, it, you know, could be game over from the start before you even put your skis on, which, you know, especially for Johannes Tengesbo, could help him a bunch, or it could kind of bring him back down to reality and closer to everyone else. So if he has, you know, a couple bad ski choices, or the Norwegian team doesn't nail the wax or the ski, or like you brought up the Le Grand Bonnat race last year, whereas all because he was on Fishers, you know, who knows what could be, but I think that possibility just got a lot bigger without the fluoro safety blanket.
Yeah. What do you think about Emilien Jacquelin? Cause I think he's a favorite of mine. I think he's a little bit cocky, you know, and he's got a lot of emotion. I guess that's the better way to put it. He's got a lot of emotion. And sometimes that comes back to bite him in the butt, you know, and you see him slamming his rifle after missing three or four targets in a relay. I forget which race that was, but you know, he's got a lot of emotion, a lot of passion. And when it goes right for him, it's just so much fun to watch him race and celebrate and, you know, be a little cocky. I think it's great and fun for the sport. Terrible season last year. I mean, most of the French men had terrible seasons last year, but, when I say terrible, I mean, he came in 16th overall. Great performance, but that's pretty far back from what he did the season. Like three seasons prior to that, they were all in the top 10. And then last year he was 16th overall. What do you got going on for Jacquelin this year?
I'm not sure what to think, just because of the whole coaching, you know, issue that went down last year. And I don't think it's a coincidence that all the French men kind of struggled a little bit and then came out at the end of the season with what they said. I think if they are clicking with their new coach this year, and his ski speed has not really changed at all over the past three seasons.
Yeah.
It's just his shooting that's tanked. And so if his shooting gets back to anywhere close to it was in the 19-20 season, I think he'll be poised to have a really good year. And I think it'd be really awesome to see him, you know, having the positive emotions more so this year than the negative emotions that we saw most of last year.
Yeah. I mean, his shooting in the 19-20 and then 2021 seasons, his shooting was 87% last year, 78%, and his standing last year, 70%. Like you can't win on that. You know, you can't see success on that. Yeah. He's not skiing that fast where he can make up for, you know, three misses in a pursuit race standing, or, you know, two misses in a sprint race or something standing. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. Last thing I'll say about the men's field, and this is a little tip for those who listen to the podcast and you're playing fantasy, again, back, biathlonpool.com. Vebjørn Sørum from Norway. All the reports coming out from Norway in the early season is that this guy, Vebjørn Sørum, is the next, not next Johannes Thingnesbø, maybe the next Turtleholm Lagerud. Kind of unknown. He had an IBU Cup season last year where he was very strong, but, you know, obviously the Norwegian team being so dominant, he had really like no World Cup experience except for one weekend where he came in like 20th. But everyone and all the reports coming out of Norway is that he's going to be a World Cup regular all season. He's super fast, including beating Johannes Thingnesbø in a team time trial that they did. He skied faster than Johannes Thingnesbø. Granted, it's November, first time trial of the season. Take it with a grain of salt. But he did back it up with two podium results in Shushan the next weekend in an official race, official results. So right now on Biathlon Pool, he only costs like $25 or something because, again, it's free to play, but the in-game money, he costs $25, which is an absolute steal. So just a little tip to all the listeners out there, might be a good one to add for some easy points early in the season. And then after the points get updated, because that's new this year in fantasy, is after each weekend, the points will be updated based on World Cup overall ranking. So expect him to be more expensive for the rest of the season. But yeah, Vebjørn Sørum, you know, just Ethan, just when you think Norway can't get any more dominant, they just got these guys coming out of nowhere who are going to be just as dominant, if not even more dominant.
I was going to say, you brought up how he came to one World Cup and got 20th and mentioned it like it was absolutely nothing.
Well, in Norway, it is absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
There's an old saying that we used to say on the team, just like kind of as a joke when I was competing more seriously, because I met this Norwegian guy at Junior Worlds one year, and you know, he comes in like the flowers at Junior Worlds, and I was like, hey, like, congrats, you know, good race, should be proud of that. And he just leans over and goes, in Norway, we only count gold. And so our team sort of like mantra that year was, you know, if it's pouring rain, we don't want to go train. We just go, in Norway, we only count gold, and just get out the door and do it.
Which, it sounds super cocky, but they can 100% back it up.
Yes, yep.
Yeah.
All right, finally, it is time for North America. You know, we got a lot of American listeners, a lot of English listeners, obviously. Let's talk about some North America. First of all, I think biggest news from North America, Campbell Wright from New Zealand, he's now raced for the USA. How's that going to do for the team, Ethan?
I am super excited to watch him race for the U.S. and have, you know, a full staff and team of support around him. I know he had been training in the U.S. with the team and training with in the U.S. and with the team pretty much the whole summer. And even when he went home to New Zealand, he was able to be on snow because the seasons are flipped. But I am so excited to watch him race this year.
Yeah, he's such a great addition to the team. I mean, his personality is just so, like, not happy-go-lucky, but he's just a happy person, just loves life, realizes that he has this incredible, you know, opportunity to do this wacky sport, travel around Europe, travel around the world, and just do this sport that is fun to participate in. And he just brings this really light, you know, atmosphere and vibe to the training, but he's also serious. Like, he's a great athlete, he's serious about what he's doing, he takes it seriously, and I think it's just a great balance. And, you know, as a coach and working with many athletes, he just brings a great balance to the headspace of, you know, being a high level athlete. Had a really good season last year, 20th at the World Championships in Oberhof, junior world champion just a couple weeks later. Technically this year he's still a junior, but I think he's going to be on the World Cup for the U.S. for most of the season. granted, it's not guaranteed anymore, being, you know, he's not a team of one anymore. So he does have to earn his spot on the World Cup. So I'm sure there might be some times where we do see him go back down to the IBU Cup a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I think it's just he's young. He's still improving, already showing great performances. Last year, he was shooting 81% on the World Cup. So hopefully he can get that up a little bit. But if he can continue to improve his skiing, then he's going to be right on track for, you know, being just probably as good as Sean Doherty. And that would be a great addition, you know, to have after Tim Burke and Lowell Bailey retired. It seems like there's a little bit of a gap. And if we can get, you know, Sean and now Campbell being that 1-2 again, that would be hopefully really good for our team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the men for the U.S. are, you know, they've got a few guys on the older side, and having someone like Campbell, who's young, full of energy, has experience and is able to compete at a really high level, is only going to have positive effects throughout the whole team.
Mm. Yeah. And also, unfortunately, I saw the news the other day that Paul Schomer is headed back to the U.S. for some rehab. His knee was flaring up again. So that gave Maxime Germain an opportunity to earn that last World Cup spot for the opener. And another guy, he is a first-year senior this year, junior last year, medaled at Junior Worlds, and has a little bit of World Cup experience, mostly IBU Cup experience. But yeah, another youngster who has tremendous talent. Max and Campbell are like two peas in a pod. They are best friends, trained all season together, including that trip down to New Zealand that you mentioned. And so it's really cool to see that they both got the nod to go race and start the World Cup. And hopefully they can both feed on each other's, you know, excitement for the sport and energy. Other North American news, not question for you is, you know, Emma Lunder, looking at the women's side now, last season, she had a really, really great start to the season and then sort of tailed off a little bit as the season went on. But, you know, she's getting a little bit to the older side now. She's 32. What do you think? Is this the season that we finally get the full year of Emma Lunder, you know, being really competitive? Or are we going to see kind of more of the same? Because it seems like she's been like, you know, first part of the season really strong and then tails off a little bit, and that's been pretty consistent throughout her career. Do you think we can see a full season of Emma Lunder at the top?
I think so, and I certainly hope so. I have a feeling that last year we were maybe seeing the effects of the Olympics and all the pressure that surrounds that event, you know, kind of still lingering, hanging on there. And, you know, she's had a full summer to recover, get back to training, and it would be so awesome to see her have a consistent, strong season. And yeah, there's a big question mark there, but I think everyone is hoping for the better outcome of the possibilities.
Yeah. A couple flower ceremonies to start the season, fourth and fifth in the sprint pursuit in, I believe it was Contilati last year. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, she did have good races. Like she came in 11th at the World Championships, a couple top 10s at the end of the season, but that was also mixed in with a bunch of like, you know, 40th places, 65th place, 54th place. So it's just that kind of classic, like you obviously have it, you know, and I guess more last year than any other season, the fact that she was still earning top 10s at the end of the season, you know, shows that you do have it. You can perform all year long, but you got to drop those 65s because those are not helping. Cause especially if you do it in a sprint and you miss a pursuit, mm-hmm. that's how you lose points right there. You got to drop those 46s, you know, out of the points. You got to stay, I mean, at a minimum in the top 40 to be continually earning points. But yeah, I hope so. I mean, it would be really cool to, because I mean, we really haven't had a North American who is a, you know, really solid bet on the women's side since Claire Egan and Susan Dunkley retired. And you know, when those two athletes, Claire and Susan, had their breakout, not breakout year, but had some of their most successful seasons, was just north of 30. And that's where Emma is now. So hopefully this is Emma Lunder's year. Could be a really good pick for the fantasy team. Have absolutely no idea how much she costs right now, but could be a good pick for your fantasy team, because I'm sure she's probably relatively cheap compared to some of the other big names, but she obviously has what it takes to be a consistent top 10 athlete.
Mm-hmm. Especially a good pick for the first individual of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's she been shooting? I know she's a really fast shooter. What's her shooting percentage right now?
That's a great question.
Looks like we got an 84%, which is kind of surprising. You know, that's pretty much World Cup standard, right where you want to be. I kind of had her pegged at a little bit better shooter, but you know what it is her shooting speed is really good. Like she's consistently a pretty quick shooter as well. So that really helps her, helps her out, where she's shooting on average. If she can shoot like everyone else, but do it just a little bit quicker, you know, gives her a little bonus points.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I just noticed looking at her graphs and data on realbiathlon.com was that there's really little to no difference in her standing hit rate and her prone hit rate throughout almost her whole career. They've been as even as it gets, which is really promising to see.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. Cause she's not like, you know, setting herself up for a good race and just trying to hold it together in standing, or, you know, can't hit the broadside of a barn and prone. So you're all of a sudden you're way back, and then you climb your way back at the last minute in standing. Like, yeah, the fact that she's both prone and standing are pretty locked at almost like that 85%. That's really cool, because that's the kind of consistency that you need to be a good biathlete. She's shown it in other areas of her, you know, skiing ability. She's been skiing really well the last about 6 years or so. So like, that's the kind of consistency. It's all kind of coming together. So actually, now that I'm looking at the stats more in depth, I'm liking Emma Lunder for a good season. You know, maybe not a globe winner, but really good breakout season for her. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what about on the women's side for the US? I mean, obviously we had the news this year where Joanne Reed declined her spot for national team naming. And then that didn't technically affect her standing on the World Cup. She still would have had to have shown up and qualified for the World Cup just based on how the criteria is written. But she is, I think she's going to school is the rumor that I hear. So she's kind of focused on a master's or something like that. And I don't have all the details about what Joanne's up to, but I don't know if she's retired or not, if we'll see her at the end of the season, see her next season, not really sure what she's up to. But without Joanne on the team, it definitely, there's a new feel to the US women's team. A lot of new names, a lot of really young names. Of course, you still have Deidre Irwin, but yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of experience. It's going to be an experiential year for a lot of the women on the US team, and not just on the World Cup team, but also on the IBU Cup team, because when those top IBU Cup athletes like Jackie Garceau move up, that opens up a spot on the IBU Cup for a newer athlete to get the IBU Cup experience.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's a great opportunity for so many members of the US women's biathlon team to get some IBU Cup experience, some World Cup experience, maybe a little bit of both, depending on how they decide to move up or down, you know, throughout the course of the season. But, you know, it's not going to be pretty all season. It's not going to be smooth sailing all season, but we could see some good results, hopefully see some growth throughout the year. And I think it sets them all up super well for going into next year, having the experience, which is so important at the highest level.
Yeah. And our top woman on the team, Deidre Irwin, I know she did spend a lot of the season training solo, but she was able to get over to Italy for a training camp. and trained with the Italians in Anholtz. And I think she even raced at like a Italian national roller ski race or something. And I didn't see the results, but from what I hear, it went very well. Who knows what that means, but it did go very well. So, you know, hopefully she can have a good season and, you know, continue to lead the women's team, you know, moving forward and, mm-hmm. and, help us earn some good Nations Cup points there. Mm-hmm. But finally, last one I wanted to bring up is, back over to the Canadian side is Adam Reynolds. He's a guy that I've been sort of following the last couple of years. I think he's a younger Canadian, 25 years old, kind of exciting, and really exciting in the shooting time category. Really, really fast shooter. And Ethan, if I asked you, who's the fastest shooter on the World Cup? You would probably by default say
Simon Adair.
Right. But you would be wrong, because last year, if you look at the data, Adam Reynolds was actually a little bit faster shooter than Simon Adair. Now it's just a matter of, can he get his ski speed up to back up that fast shooting? And he's got an 82% hit rate, so he's got to get the shooting percent up a little bit. But I think, I don't know, something about Adam turning 25. The Canadians have a generally young team, and, you know, he's probably one of the older ones on the team by now, even though he's only 25. So it'd be really cool to see if he can have a breakout season this year.
Mm-hmm. I think he's got a lot going for him. The shooting time, his shooting hit rate isn't terrible. It's not exceptional, but, you know, if he continues to improve that while shooting at a super high speed, you know, that could take him a lot of places. Like you said, he's relatively young and inexperienced in terms of, you know, top results on the World Cup, but I think he's got a lot going for him. That's for sure.
Yeah. His best result ever was last year in Anholtz in the sprint. He came in 13th, shooting 100% with a 41st ski time, and his best ski time ever was 30th. So obviously a little off the mark in the ski speed category. But yeah, I mean, it just goes to show, if he can shoot well with those fast ski times, those fast shooting times, I mean, he's getting to a point where he's shooting so fast that he can almost, I don't want to say make up for a penalty loop, but he's shooting so fast that it's significant. Like, it's mm-hmm. a significant piece of his attack on the rest of the field. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think another thing we're not giving him enough credit for is, in his IBU picture last year, he has an amazing mustache.
Yeah, and a mullet, it looks like.
Yeah, I think if he's rocking those again, nothing's going to stop him.
Yeah. Came in 38th overall last year, and that's way up from 85th the season prior. So I think it would be really cool if we see Adam Reynolds hovering around the 20 mark, or, yeah, somewhere in the 20s at the end of the season. I think that would be a really good season for him, and he should be super proud of that. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see. Keep an eye on Adam Reynolds if you're a North American fan. But all right, Ethan, let's wrap this up. We got our spare round, and now there weren't really any misses in today's season opening podcast. So this is just a shot into the woods. all right, so I want you to share, a text that you sent me a couple days ago. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so as we've mentioned it many times in this episode, Brian has his fantasy biathlon pool. It's free to enter. Anyone can enter. We both enjoy it, and we both enjoy sport, biathlon. Another sport we enjoy is baseball. And so I texted Brian a little friendly wager where, out of the two of us, whoever finishes higher in the fantasy biathlon pool has to do kind of a forfeit, if you will. And since we both enjoy baseball, the forfeit was, since I'm a Red Sox fan and Brian is a New York Yankees fan, whoever loses has to wear the other team's jersey to a game at the other team's stadium, which is, it sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah, I know this, like, you're trying to get one of us killed, Ethan. Yeah, so for those who don't know, obviously, I mean, the Yankees and the Red Sox, huge rivalry in American sports, arguably one of the biggest, if not the biggest rivalry in sports. And I mean, back in the 90s and 80s, like, you could not wear an opposing team's logo to the other stadium or you would legitimately get beaten.
Yeah.
I will say I have worn a Yankees jersey to Fenway Park in Boston, and I'm here, still here to tell the tale. I was guarded by my freakishly tall cousin, who is a Red Sox fan. He was my guard that day. So maybe we'll have to employ him again if I lose this bet. But no, I'm really looking forward to it. I think this gives, you know, reputation aside, I mean, if I have a terrible fantasy season, it's like, you know, what does that guy know? But now I'm like, you know, I'm fighting to not have to go to Fenway Park in a Red Sox jersey. Or actually, no, you would have to come to Yankee Stadium in a Yankee jersey. Mm-hmm. Oh, I see how it's going again. Wait, I understand the bet now. Okay, so there's no fear of getting beaten up anymore. But no, just wearing the other team's jersey. No, I've never worn a single article of Red Sox gear, and I will not. So get ready to lose, Ethan.
I don't know about that. We'll just have to see how it goes.
Yeah. So keep an eye on that if you're playing fantasy to see where Ethan and I are ranking against each other.
Mm-hmm. We'll give you guys updates throughout the course of the season too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Ethan. That does it. That's our first podcast of the year. We did it. We're one for one. World Cup starts this weekend with some relays. And I was just saying before we started recording that I got to wait until the start lists come out because I don't know who is going to be racing in the single mixed versus the mixed. And for most teams, that makes a big difference in how they're going to do, because I think most teams have one or two really strong athletes, but nobody except for like maybe Norway and I guess maybe the Norwegian men, like Norwegian women, definitely not. Nobody has a depth of four really strong men and women. So I really got to wait till the start list come out to make my teams. But yeah, I'm super excited. It's been too long.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a dangerous game though, waiting for the start list to come out, because the single mixed relay is scheduled to start at 5:30 in the morning here in the Midwest.
Yeah, and I live even farther west than you do, so mm-hmm. I'm probably gonna end up forgetting and I'm gonna be stuck with no team and you're gonna be off to a really good start.
Just have to wait and see.
Yeah. All right, well, hey, why don't we let's meet up after this weekend of racing and we'll record our reactions from the first weekend of biathlon racing. And everyone will know if I was able to get my teams in on time or not.